From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. With reports of alleged terror plots lighting up the media across the U.S. and Europe, China's security forces report that they broke up what appeared to be an attempt to bomb a busy commercial district in the country's northwest. We have this report from CCTV.
Police in northwest China say they fought a large-scale bomb attack on a commercial district. Local media reports say six attackers attempted to detonate explosive devices on Monday morning in a commercial district in Shulia County in the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region. All six were killed by police. Local residents say they spotted one of the suspects trying to plant one of the devices and called the police. The suspect then attacked police with an axe and tried to detonate his explosive device, but he was shot and killed by the police officers. While that was taking place, another five attackers attempted to ignite explosive devices attached to their bodies. They were also killed by officers at the scene. There are no reports of any casualties among civilians or the police or any injuries. A minibus with more explosives inside was also later found at the scene.
Meanwhile, more signs of warming relations on the Korean Peninsula. After nearly seven decades of fighting, people on both sides of the line dividing the Republic of Korea or South Korea from the Democratic People's Republic of Korea or North Korea are saying that 2015 could see a major breakthrough in relations. CCTV's Tao Yen has more.
Decades of antagonism, frequent military encounters, countless verbal threats. Many in South Korea now believe the new year might be a turning point for the Korean Peninsula.
From the DPRK side, Kim Jong-un mentioned widening talks between the North and South during his New Year address, and even said there is no reason not to hold the highest level talks. So I think this year might possibly have further talks.
Seoul says if Pyongyang accepts the offer to hold talks, one of the main focuses will be family reunions. Tens of thousands of families were separated after the end of the Korean War. 60 years later, the border remains heavily fortified, and there's no means of contact between ordinary citizens. Nearly half of the 70,000 South Koreans who are registered as separated families are now over 80.
The reunion of families who were separated by the 1950 to 53 Korean War of great importance. The first generation now are very old and they are keen to meet their relatives. They want to see them soon.
Many South Koreans have expressed their hope of maintaining stability and peace between the two sides.
The DPRK is a threat to the fort, but the people are our fellow citizens. We should look forward. The two sides should coexist through mutual understanding.
I hope the two sides could stop confrontation and get along well with each other.
And 2015 marks the 70th anniversary of Korea's independence from Japan. Yu says the two sides should make the most of the occasion.
Many events in social, economic, and humanitarian areas are being prepared for the 70th anniversary. This is the best opportunity ever. We should take advantage of that.
South Korea has expressed hope that the DPRK will agree to stage another round of family reunion around the Lunar New Year, which falls on February 19th. Tao Yuan, CCTV.
However, Washington doesn't appear to have received the memo, instead continuing to crank up the propaganda barrage against the North. Brian Becker is with the Answer Coalition. He spoke with RT's Peter Laveau on the program Crosstalk Sunday.
We're witnessing in the mainstream media the demonization script that's being carried out against the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, or North Korea. It's one that's gone on for a long time. It's been done over and over again. In the case here, we see a movie being promoted that celebrates the assassination, the very violent, gruesome assassination of a head of state in North Korea. And you have to just put that in the context of how the North Koreans and the Korean people in general might view that. The United States dropped bombs on Korea, and mainly on North Korea, between 1950 and 1953. The main complaint of the pilots, the U.S. pilots at the end of that war, was that there was nothing left to bomb. They dropped immense quantities of napalm. 4 million Koreans died. And since then, since the signing of the armistice in July 1953, the U.S. refuses to sign a peace treaty with North Korea, and instead, twice a year, carries out the simulated invasion of North Korea and its nuclear annihilation through very sophisticated, large-scale war games, the biggest war games that the U.S. conducts anywhere, and at the same time keeps up this constant media barrage against North Korea, which started even more dramatically when President Bush said in January 2002 that North Korea, Iraq, and Iran were part of an axis of evil, and then he proceeded to invade Iraq and execute the head of state in Iraq. So you can see from a North Korean point of view, this doesn't seem very funny, but in fact is part of a menacing scenario that mirrors reality.
Journalist Patrick Henningsen said the recent Sony film controversy about the North was actually coordinated between Hollywood and the U.S. government.
Well, looking at this recent controversy with the Sony hack, one thing you have to just quickly underline here is that Michael Linton, the CEO of Sony, also sits on the board of the RAND Corporation. And it was reported by the Washington Post, Annan Hornaday reported that back in July, during the final edit process, he ran the film past the someone at RAND and also the U.S. State Department. And in both cases, he got their blessing. And it was interesting, the comment from the U.S. State Department about this film being crucial in demoralizing the North Korean regime once it's leaked out on DVD. So that was reported in the Washington Post. So you can see the narrative of the North Korea Sony hack was agreed by Sony and Washington, and they just went with that narrative. And then they came up with something else called the Unit 121, the nefarious North Korean hacking group from in a basement somewhere in Pyongyang, and they were responsible for the hack. That originated from a speech by Kim Jong-un last year, which was reported in South Korea, and then the U.S. just riffed off that. So the U.S. State Department, the White House, getting its hacking menace narrative directly from Kim Jong-un.
Lebanon was the scene of a terrorist bombing. We have this report from Press TV.
The United Nations Security Council has denounced Sunday's bombing in Lebanon's northern city of Tripoli, which killed 9 people. The 15-member body has expressed outrage at the attack claimed by al-Qaeda's official offshoot in Syria, the al-Nusra Front. The Security Council has also called for the perpetrators to be brought to justice and urged unity among Lebanese. 2 Lebanese citizens launched the attack that took place in the Jabal Mohsen district of Tripoli. That area is dominated by members of the Alawite sect, who are supporters of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. To discuss that further, and I joined with Mr. Ridwan Risk, who is a political commentator, and he's joining us now from Beirut. Mr. Risk, how do you feel about this condemnation of the Security Council?
Well, I don't think that's something serious coming from the Security Council, UN Security Council, because the UN Security Council has much more than a responsibility than condemnation of these attacks on civilians in Jabal Mohsen. As far as I know, that's they were just they have ignored all kind of serious steps against terrorism. There are some countries that are sitting there are main supporters of terrorism in the area, especially we're talking about Saudi Arabia and Turkey, and other countries like Qatar also. So before the condemnation, that serious steps and actions should have been taken by the UN Security Council against countries who are just supporting those groups. And it's not a secret anymore. Either they do it directly or indirectly through other agents in the region. So the responsibility here should go further, especially after the explosions in France and now in Lebanon again. So that showed that if they want to do something to stop this kind of attacks and bloodshedding, they should start taking serious actions. They should warn the countries who are supporting them, and they should be serious about it. Otherwise, nothing will be changed except that condemnations issues, and especially that the countries like Israel is now the main supporter and contains those groups and on its borders with Syria, and that they are directly involved with especially with a Nusra Front, which has claimed responsibility for the explosions in Jabal Mohsen. So these are all affiliated to each other, and that they have lots of, you know, this is connected to each other. We are facing a very organized, well-funded, well-trained organization here, a terrorist organization, and getting lots of support from big countries who are claiming to do that, they are protecting democracy and they are with freedom and against any kind of terrorism. But on the other hand, that we know that they could have not done anything like that without help, without shelters, without information. And so that's why we feel that sometimes we feel and we know that lots of intelligence services of countries in the region do have direct connections and contact with them, and sometimes they are directing them, and they are employed to implement their agendas and propaganda in this kind of attack. And on the other hand, that it came on the same time, on the same day that the leader of Jabal Mohsen was going to be trialed in front of the Lebanese judiciary. So we believe that that was a clear message for Mr. Rifaat Eid not to come back to Jabal Mohsen. At the same time, it's a direct message to the Lebanese resistance and the Lebanese government at the same time, that the fighting on the borders did not secure the Lebanon at its maximum or stopped, because those two attackers came back to Lebanon a week ago before the attack. So that also brings to the surface again the same problem and the same issue, that if the Kalamun area in Syria does not be, you know, cannot be cleansed totally from those groups, and those should be eliminated permanently from the Lebanese-Syrian borders, that we might have, we might face similar attacks in the future.
The attack in Lebanon raised concerns that the terrorist war against Syria that has already spread into Iraq could be crossing the border into Lebanon as well. Press TV's Ali Risk reports from Beirut.
The latest terror attack in Lebanon's northern city of Tripoli, which the Al-Qaeda-affiliated Al-Nusra Front claimed responsibility for, came as a stark reminder that the Takfiri threat towards the country remains very real. Tripoli is believed to be a place which Al-Qaeda has long had its sights set on, and the crisis in neighboring Syria has brought the movement much closer to Lebanon's northern city.
The first country in the world the word Al-Qaeda appeared is in Lebanon in 2000, and their eye is on Tripoli and its countryside and a car plane from a long time ago in order to reach to the Mediterranean.
Many Lebanese nationals from the north have traveled to Syria to fight in the ranks of terror groups. This has triggered increased radicalization, placing the city in the eye of the storm time and again. Even before the Syrian crisis, Tripoli was known for its vulnerability to extremism and for a strong extremist presence.
There are hundreds of Lebanese who received education from some schools in Akkar, which are headed by Al-Qaeda ideology and Al-Qaeda preachers, and they are still now in Lebanon. The same looks like the Taliban schools in Pakistan.
Deadly sporadic clashes and bombing struck the northern city after the infiltration of Takfiri terrorists into Syria. And even some politicians from the north are accused of playing an active role in supporting the armed groups across the border. As long as terrorism exists in Syria, Lebanon will not be immune from Takfiri projects and attacks. Preemptive operations by the Lebanese movement of Hezbollah have helped maintain security to some extent. But the future of security in Lebanon, like many other regional countries, depends on the developments in Syria. Ali Risk, Press TV, Beirut.
Hundreds were reported killed in Nigeria by members of the group Boko Haram. The attack drew the condemnation of the UN Secretary General. Daniel Dickinson reports from the United Nations.
Attacks by terrorists belonging to the Boko Haram group, which have reportedly claimed hundreds of lives in Nigeria, have been condemned by the UN Secretary General. Ban Ki-moon made the condemnation after more than 20 people were killed by three female suicide bombers, including a 10-year-old girl. The Secretary General said using the young girl to detonate a bomb at a market in Maiduguri in Borno State was a depraved act. Mr. Ban also said he's appalled by reports of the killings of civilians around the town of Baga near Nigeria's border with Chad last week. According to media reports, as many as 2,000 bodies still litter bushes after that attack. Mr. Ban said that the United Nations stands ready to assist the Nigerian government and all affected neighbouring states in bringing an end to the violence and to alleviate the suffering of civilians. The Boko Haram terrorists, who now control parts of northeastern Nigeria, have vowed to create an Islamic state in the region. Daniel Dickinson, United Nations.
Meanwhile, the group known as ISIS reportedly hacked the U.S. Central Command's Twitter and YouTube accounts, posting internal documents online. The organization's so-called cyber caliphate infiltrated the Twitter account on Monday and issued threats against American soldiers. RT's Guyan Chichikayan has more.
Just as President Obama was wrapping up his speech on cybersecurity and consumer data protection, the official Twitter account of U.S. Central Command started spilling out propaganda from the Islamic State terrorist group. And on YouTube, pro-Islamic State videos were being posted on CENTCOM's official channel. Some internal military documents also appeared on the CENTCOM Twitter feed. It's not clear whether there is any serious security threat. The White House says they're looking into the hack. But the timing was quite embarrassing. President Obama spoke about protecting internet users and their data. And in the meantime, a U.S. government agency was unable to protect its own Twitter account. One can argue, of course, that it's just a Twitter account and a YouTube channel and not a large data breach, and that it was more of a PR attack by ISIS rather than a technical one. But again, the timing. And speaking of timing, U.S. lawmakers are considering tougher cybersecurity laws. Last week, citing the Sony Pictures cyber attack, one congressman, Democrat, revived a controversial cybersecurity bill that would allow U.S. technology companies and businesses to share private user data with the government, previously known as the CISPA. The new bill aims to, quote, help businesses proactively prevent attacks by creating a system of voluntary information sharing between the public and private sectors. Privacy advocates are very much against this kind of legislation, saying it would do little to protect consumers, but it would give the government way too much power over their private information. The White House used to be against the CISPA. Previously, the Obama administration said the president would veto CISPA should it pass his desk because of the shared civil liberties concerns. But following the Sony hack, the substance of the Obama administration's rhetoric seems to have changed. And very recently, President Obama said he hoped in this new year Congress would work on stronger cybersecurity laws that would allow for information sharing across private sector platforms as well as the public sector. So in the wake of these cyber attacks, legislative measures that were previously rejected because of privacy concerns might be back on the table.
Among other messages on the Twitter account was one that said, quote, American soldiers, we are coming, watch your back, ISIS, closed quote, with the hashtag at cybercaliphate. A YouTube account belonging to CENTCOM was also hacked. ISIS hackers posted propaganda videos on CENTCOM's YouTube feed. That account was also later disabled. The U.S. Defense Department has confirmed that the accounts were compromised. Across Europe, the official response after last week's attacks on a French magazine and related incidents has started to come out. Seeking to boost security across the European Union, the bloc's interior ministers are calling for passenger data to be more widely shared, while boosting surveillance to maximum levels is the solution offered by London's mayor, Boris Johnson, who says he has no time for civil liberties when it comes to terrorists. RT's Andrew Farmer spoke with former CIA analyst Ray McGovern about the situation on the continent in the aftermath of last week's attacks.
Well, I think the stoking of fear, be afraid, be very afraid, is typical of what happened after 9/11 in our country. I don't think it helps. I think it inspires the worst in us, the spirit of vengeance. And when I hear the talk about increasing surveillance measures, Well, you know, it is fact, not interpretation, that there were enough surveillance measures against these two from the beginning. They were on the no-fly list. They were communicating in unencrypted telephone conversations, as far as we know. There was everything in place necessary to get these guys. Why they weren't gotten is really a puzzle. Now, there are lots of conspiracy theories saying the French let them do this. I can't buy that. It's more typical of Western intelligence services to be just really dumb, really ineffectual. And if you need proof of that, read James Risen's latest book, when he talks about the fellows that ran the place where I used to work for 27 years were just completely clowns and could not cope with the challenges that they faced after the Cold War.
Okay, I mean, in their defense, we do know they don't give details, but they do say they have foiled many attacks recently as well. This could see them, well, they are under a lot of pressure now, authorities, to take decisive action in the wake of what has happened. What sort of action can they take, do you think, that would actually help the situation?
Well, they can avoid building a larger haystack of information on terrorists. Now, what I mean is this. When NSA and various allies decide to collect everything on the whole, from the whole world, from all of us, and put it in this haystack, lest they miss anything, they can't get any needles under this haystack. So divert the billions of dollars that went into that into tried and true defective techniques, intelligence analysis, and you'll be able to nab people like Abdul-Muttalib, the fellow that tried to down a commercial aircraft over Detroit on Christmas Day 2009. You'll be able to get these folks, just traditional detective work. And the reason that a lot of that does not happen anymore is because of this fixation with, well, we'll collect all the conversations. Well, the conversations weren't even encrypted. Why was no one listening to these two? It just defies the imagination. What needs to happen is go back to the tried and true intelligence techniques that we're all familiar with during the Cold War and shortly thereafter, which were all cast aside as soon as multi-million dollar corporations decided that they can make a lot of money by selling these ineffectual eavesdropping, blanket eavesdropping techniques to the Western services.
Ray, from what you say, you believe this could be then potentially a wake-up call to security services to change the way they do things. Do you think that will happen, though, and why? If not, I assume you don't, why won't they do that, in your opinion?
Well, it really depends on the media. Now, with the exception of RT, Al Jazeera, and a couple other places, the French, United States citizens, they won't know. They won't know what I just said, that the conversations were not encrypted. These guys were on the no-fly list. Everything was in place to get them. Why didn't they get them? Well, how are we going to repair that situation? We'll spend much more dollars and francs on these ineffectual building of haystacks. So what I'm saying here is that it's not likely to change unless the mass media in these countries gets a little honest about this business and says, look, this was a failure, an utter failure of intelligence. The information was there. This should never have happened.
In Mexico, the government appears to have called off the search for the 43 missing student teachers whose cases brought the people of the country into the streets by the tens of thousands. Telesur's Clayton Kahn has more on the case of the missing Ayotzinapa students and their families.
Iguala, Guerrero, the same town where the Ayotzinapa students were attacked and disappeared last September by police, have suspended searching for the missing loved ones due to what they say are threats from organized crime groups. Now, these families have been leading independent searches for their missing in recent weeks, finding dozens of clandestine graves in the process. The social movement growing around the tragedy of the Ayotzinapa students has galvanized many families of other victims to demand justice. While the authorities have provided security, the families now say they've abandoned them. Many say crime, insecurity, and corruption continue in many parts in the wake of the Ayotzinapa tragedy. And on Friday, Mexico's President Enrique Peña Nieto held a special meeting to advise Mexico's ambassadors to, quote, clean up the international image of the country, tarnished by the violence. This is Clayton Kahn reporting for Telesur here in Mexico City.
Kerry Chacabuna Marshall is imprisoned in the bowels of the penitentiaries of Pennsylvania. He offered this political commentary about police murder through prison radio.
How to Get Away with Cop Murder by Kerry Shakabuna Marshall. There is a disturbing pattern of cops getting away with murdering unarmed, mostly black and Latino males in America. This pattern of cops murdering unarmed black males can be seen in the cases of Oscar Grant, Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, and Eric Garner. From the patterns of those cases, one can discern the blueprint for how to get away with cop murder. Step one, join any police department in America to become a cop. Now you have a license to kill anyone you don't like. Step two, identify a person to kill from America's undesirable poor class and its historical racialized boogeyman, preferably a big black because the lives of the poor and people of color don't matter in America. Step three, wait for a situation to arise or create a confrontational situation with a scary black guy, then shoot him to death. Step four, stick to your claim of justifiable homicide while the systems of institutional racism circle their wagons to protect you. Just remain firm and consistent in your cover story of you stopped a suspect. He became angry and violent. He was a big black guy. You feared for your life, so you shot him to death, although he was unarmed and hadn't committed a crime. Don't be concerned about news stations placing the national spotlight on you, because although they will put on a good show of objective reporting, CNN, Fox News, HLN are actually on the government's and cops' side and have your back. They are going to put before cameras their team of talking heads of ex-cops, ex-prosecutors, criminal justice experts, politicians, government-appointed black stooge leaders, and Uncle Tom black apologists for white supremacy to come up with every excuse imaginable to justify murder of an innocent, unarmed black male. Step five, have a secret grand jury or a criminal trial by jury. No matter the judicial process, the deck is stacked in your favor to win. So don't sweat it. You'll be just fine. Step six, discredit the murder victim and all witnesses to the crime because the dead victim can't tell his side of the story and witnesses can be contradictory. Besides, who are the public going to believe? A seemingly honest cop or these animals in the streets? Step seven, blame the cause of murder on the deceased victim himself by stating the suspect attacked you, appeared menacing, reached for your gun, was a giant man, was like a demon, or he resisted arrest. Any of these justifications will suffice to place the blame on the victim. Step eight, overwhelm the jury with so much evidence and frivolous information about the evidence that it obscures the issue, allowing the jury to reach a favorable decision that will get you off the hook. The judicial outcome is predictable, no criminal indictment, or a verdict of not guilty of any crime. Now your mission is complete. You have just gotten away with committing cop murder. I am Kerry Shakabuna Marshall, co-founder and editor of the Movement Human Rights Magazine, prison radio correspondent, and child life of prisoner, confined at SCI Rockview, Box A, BE7826, Belfont, PA, 16823. Thank you for listening.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.